So welcome to the podcast of the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today I'm joined by our Director of Clinical Training, Dr. David Sorrell, to have a chat about a paper that we were talking about within the office called Defining Occult Injuries of the Distal Forearm and Wrist in Children. This is an open access paper that you can find in the Journal of Child Orthopaedics from 2016, authored by Michael Elvey, out of the Trauma and Orthopaedic Department of the University College London Hospital. And it's an interesting paper, and Dave and I have been chatting about it. So, Dave, if I, first of all, welcome to the podcast again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
If I was to ask you to see this child who's fallen over, landed on their wrist, been sent for an x-ray, and the x-ray looks normal, would you diagnose that child as having sprained their wrist?
Probably not on review of this paper.
And if they haven't sprained their wrist with an x-ray negative x-ray, what have they done then?
So this is a very good paper, and I hope you all read it. And it really does explain the differences between adults and children. And it's also location specific. So this reflects the management of wrist injuries in children. It doesn't actually reflect the management of other injuries. And in this paper, it does talk about ankle injuries as well, which is very good. So the default position for a child, so a growing child who has growth plates and they come in and they have tenderness over the growth plate, the diagnosis when the x-ray is normal is there is probably an invisible bone injury there, and that seems to be equal parts of bone contusion or occult bony injury, which I would presume is the best description of a Salter-Harris type 1, and that very few of the patients actually have a wrist sprain, and so that term should not be used.
And this study used MRI to make this determination based on a negative x-ray. They went on and performed MRIs in 57 patients. So what was the breakdown of those 57 in terms of their findings?
So yeah, it's not a big study, but I think it's a very important study, and it would be good if it could be repeated. So they found 36.5% of the patients had a fracture, what you'd probably call a Salter-Harris type 1, and 35% had a bone contusion, which is pretty much only visible on MRI study, and so that's quite good that they can pick those up. And then only 14% had a true soft tissue injury, many of which were TFCC injuries. So in actual fact, it's quite inappropriate to term a plain radiograph normal wrist injury as a sprain unless there's any other evidence to support it. Now that doesn't necessarily mean you can't manage it how you have been managing sprains. So it seems to be highly appropriate to manage these types of radiologically occult injuries with a removable splint or casting or even a tube grip, and that most of them did resolve within the 3 weeks. And so the urgent care physician should be able to manage these by putting them in a splint, reviewing them in a week, or sending them to the hand therapist as another alternative to look at alternative splinting measures. And then reviewing the patient, in my case, I'd usually review them in 1 week and 3 weeks. You probably don't need to repeat the x-rays unless you have some other concern or the radiology report is quite different. But it's all about how you convey the information to the parents and the patient and how you correctly manage the patients. It would seem that very few of them need significant orthopedic follow-up, but I guess if they're really quite sore after 3 weeks, it may be appropriate to get ortho review for the other pathologies that may be present.
So you're saying it's probably more focusing on how we maybe speak to the parents about this injury, the words that we use. So how would you describe these injuries? Because if you use the word fracture, a very common thing for any patient actually to say to you is it a fracture or a break? So yes. There's a lot of confusion over that sort of nomenclature. But then you've got, you know the kind of the feeling in the community might be, oh, he's just sprained it so he can go back and play rugby, versus, oh, he's broken it, why isn't he in a cast? So how do you think we should navigate this kind of potential minefield of naming these what they are?
So I think how I approach it is, I say, I think there's an invisible bone injury. And to explain that, the growth plate is somewhat like looking for a black cat outside at nighttime with its eyes shut. You can determine that it's probably there, you can hear it meowing, but you can't actually see it. And so that will be equal parts of Salter-Harris type 1 fractures and bone contusions. So an invisible bone injury is my favorite term that I seem to have adopted. And you can say that these tend to heal faster than normal fractures. And it's kind of like a fracture, and therefore it doesn't usually need to have a full cast. Although it's perfectly reasonable to put them in a back slab for a week as well, and then convert them to a splint. And sometimes when I've actually had these patients go to the hand therapist, they've said that the patient was too sore, so they converted from the simple futuro splint to a soft cast, which is great because those are easy to remove and reassess. I think that if it's also important to check the X-ray reports, and everyone should be reviewing their radiology reports. So that's my main approach, and then select out the ones that haven't kind of got better by 3 weeks or don't seem to be improving.
The first line of the introduction says, the first radiological sign of wrist trauma in the pediatric patient may be evidence of a healing process. You've mentioned before that they may not need follow-up X-rays, but you would probably re-X-ray them if they were still sore at the 3 week mark.
Yeah, I think so. This is one of the important things, that if you are telling the parents that there's an invisible bone injury and eventually they need a second image, or eventually they see an orthopod who does another X-ray or an MRI and they say, right, there is this healing bone injury, then you're not incorrect. And so you don't create distrust between the clinician and the patient or parents, and it actually is a fulfilling prophecy. It's like, well, right now this invisible bone injury has become visible, and as this paper says, it may take between 3 and 5 weeks for it to show up, and that way you can reserve your orthopedic spots for those ones that are taking longer to heal, and that's probably a good approach from my point of view.
And is there any role in MRI? Because they used MRI here to determine whether or not there were these occult injuries that were not radio opaque. But is there a place in the management for MRI outside of the studies?
Yes. So, and they actually have a good conclusion in there. So in the last paragraph, it says, symptoms typically subside in 3 weeks of rest and a splint. For those that remain significantly symptomatic and where clinical concern exists, an MRI is offered at this time. So that, there you have it, between 3 and 5 weeks, or maybe at 5 weeks, it would be appropriate for an orthopod to consider imaging with advanced imaging. And also what's interesting when I read this is, for people who are interested in research and interested in POCUS, will there be a role of ultrasound of that growth plate? Can ultrasound help to differentiate these types of injuries? That is something I haven't seen research on, and people can email us to say if they've seen any papers, but it would be a really interesting area of research looking for these bony occult injuries with point of care ultrasound.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. We had a good talk at the boot camp, didn't we, by Gary Mitchell on POCUS in musculoskeletal injuries. So we might get in touch with him and see if he is able to differentiate anything using that, because that's certainly much more available to us than MRI. So your feeling would be, if somebody is still significantly sore at 3 weeks, that's the time to maybe move them out of the urgent care setting into an orthopedic setting for them to consider higher imaging?
I think that's one way. Some clinicians may want to wait for 5 weeks, but I guess it's about, have they improved, have they deteriorated? And so if they're still very, very sore over that physis, then perhaps re-imaging and referral. And certainly in my approach, when I read a report and it's normal, I don't re-x-ray at 1 week. When I read a report and there is a fracture, I often re-x-ray at 1 week to check that there has not been increased angulation.
You've mentioned a few times hand therapists. Are you referring them to hand therapy and leaving follow-up to hand therapists, or do you co-follow them up between you and them?
It depends what type of therapy I'm using. I quite like to review them if I'm using the Ixos thermoplastic splint, which you may have heard of at the boot camp, which I use quite often. And those ones I like to review at 1 and 3 weeks, where I take off the Ixos splint, examine the physis, and give them extra undersleeves so that they can do that. And then I like to see whether they've healed at 3 weeks. And that's my standard sort of probable occult bony injury using a specialist splint rather than a normal Futuro splint. But I do refer them for the fitting of the Ixos by the hand therapist.
And one thing people might be concerned about is over-treating kids in casts or under-treating them. There's that kind of Goldilocks, too much, too little, just right. If somebody's in a lot of pain, putting them in a cast is probably very appropriate. But I'm sure you've come across some kids who then almost become dependent on the cast, and you want to try and encourage movement. And I've often referred those to physio, hand physios, to encourage movement in those x-ray negative cases. But from what this is saying, if there is this occult bony injury that we can't see on the x-ray, we're probably best to treat these up to the 3 to 5 week period in a cast. Or some form of support for them. So how many of these do you find in your experience will then go on to develop chronic stiffness, or even worse, the kind of chronic wrist pain syndromes that you can develop?
That's a very, very interesting question. And I have sometimes had letters back from the hand therapist raising concern about a pain syndrome or a sensitivity syndrome, or what is sometimes called a Cripps-like phenomenon. And it does pose a question, because what I would like is the hand therapist to encourage mobilization, and often the hand therapist is saying the same thing, that they want me to encourage mobilization. So it's a rather more infrequent phenomenon, and it does sometimes create the problem of everyone wondering what to do next. In that situation, I would probably like an orthopod to review and reinforce that there's nothing significant, and that may be the situation where the MRI can be very helpful. And so for those ones, maybe they need to move more rather than less. I haven't had too many people of this age group, sort of 6 to 16, ending up with stiff wrists as a result of immobilization. And that's also the extra advantage of a splint, because they can come out of the splint and they can do rotation, flexion, extension, and it's not likely to cause any extra injury when you have an occult bony injury.
And did any of these cases, of these 57, have any negative outcomes afterwards? From, I don't think there's any reference to...
Well, it says all patients were subsequently discharged with a median time to discharge of 37 days. So I don't think there were any major negative outcomes. That there was 2 waist scaphoid fractures and 1 lunate fracture. Obviously, you've got to bear in mind, are you missing those? Usually, you wouldn't expect them to have tenderness over the physis, and then MRI may be the most appropriate follow-up. So obviously, some of these you're thinking scaphoid, and then it raises the question of, an invisible scaphoid injury, does that need a scaphoid cast, or is it some form of scaphoid splint appropriate, which is actually usually my protocol to go for a splint. And I do remember a very interesting case of a 12-year-old whose scaphoid waist fracture showed up at 21 days. But they did have clinically significant tenderness over their scaphoid. But I don't think any harm was done by not immediately cast immobilising them.
Because as you say, if they've got tenderness over the physis, that's quite an easy place to identify. If they're sore over the carpal bones, what this study might suggest is that there is an occult carpal bone fracture, of which scaphoid is one that we are always looking for, but lunate is maybe one we're often looking for lunate dislocations on the x-ray, but a lunate fracture is not something I've seen, particularly in kids, very often. But this may be ones that we've called a sprain in the past, because they've got pain over the wrist ligaments, not over the physis, with an x-ray negative, so we call it a wrist sprain.
Yeah, and I think it's another example of words and diagnosis matter, but sometimes the way we describe them changes. I mean, just look at the differences in the description of wheeze in children. Sometimes my head is in a spin trying to work out what I'm supposed to be calling things. And I think everyone can have their own terms that they use, but I guess wrist sprain is probably not the best term when it comes to children.
Which was going to lead me to my next question. Here in New Zealand, we have to code injuries under ACC, the accident insurance national system here. How should we be defining these when we've seen them?
So you see the patient, you assess them, and even before you send them to x-ray, if you are thinking this is very sore over the growth plate, you should be coding it as a fracture, because an invisible fracture is still a fracture, and sprain is not a good code to use, because the ones that are clearly broken on the initial x-ray are not sprains, and those that are radiologically normal are clearly more likely to be an occult bony injury and hence not a sprain as well. Only 14% of those patients with a normal x-ray had a sprain. So the take-home point is code it as a fracture of the lower end of the radius as the code comes up on our computer.
And then the clarification, suspected, would you put?
Yeah, suspected is fine. I often, when I'm doing the ACC 45 prior to seeing the image, I often put suspected and then change it to confirmed afterwards. I don't think it's, and it can be important for the charge coding for the immobilization. So it's always a good idea to go with the correct diagnosis. And I can remember changing a code yesterday for someone that I clearly saw a fracture, and I'm wondering why I didn't put that code in even myself.
So just to be clear, we're only talking about wrist, sort of distal radial and wrist injuries here. We're not talking about any of the, like the thumb, a volar plate sprain is still a volar plate sprain of the finger. An ulnar collateral ligament sprain, kids can still do that. This paper was just commenting on wrist sprain is probably not a diagnosis we can make in kids.
Yes, so it's not transferable to other joints, no other joints. And obviously, for instance, the volar plate, I refer to them as volar plate avulsion injuries, whether that's the soft tissue plate or the fracture. And I did see one last night, and it's not as important to say this is a Salter-Harris 3 fracture of the base of the middle phalanx. It's more important to say this is a volar plate avulsion injury grade 1, where it's 1 millimeter or less. And so each injury has to be learned as the doctor goes on, and they should be managed themselves. And the interesting point, it draws comparison to the ankle injury MRI study, which I also enjoyed reading, showing that pretty much 95% of ankle injuries in the age group of 6 to 16 with x-ray normal were sprained. So MRI showed only 1 in 20 had a invisible bony injury, which just goes to show that joints are not equal. and that you should manage them as an individual joint.
It's interesting, isn't it, how essentially two different parts of the body have this very different way of coping with mechanical stresses from falls or twists or jumps. And ultimately, in this sort of situation, we're treating the child clinically. So if they're significantly sore that you want to x-ray them, then they're probably leaving your clinic with a diagnosis of an occult bony injury or a confirmed bony injury, depending on the x-ray, and some form of splinting, cast, and follow-up with somebody. But you're not using the term sprain.
Yes.
In a nutshell, is that your...
Yeah, and this was all sparked by a Twitter comment where a doctor had said, stop using the term wrist sprain in children. And so I followed up on that tweet and read the papers and drew my own conclusions, which I thought that was a very valid comment.
And were they referencing this paper?
They were specifically referencing this paper, although it did take quite a bit of research into what the reference pertained to, which was in the follow-up Twitter comments.
And that was the Random Handom again, one of your favourites on Twitter.
That's correct. Taken with a grain of salt at all times.
Great. So thanks, Dave. It is an interesting paper. It is open access, so you can all read the entire thing. And it's definitely a quick read. It's worth a read. As you say, it's a small study, but reasonably strong conclusions, and there are orthopaedic surgeons out there who are making this statement, and it doesn't change our management too much, but it certainly should change the way we speak to patients' parents in particular and define what it is, and kids don't sprain their wrists, it would seem.
Yes.
So thanks, Dave. We will catch you again another time, and for everyone else, thanks for listening.